Welcome everyone to episode 29 of the Business of Sport. My name is Ahmed Al-Houli, and as usual, I have my co-host, Mr. Rob Yao, joining me every single week. Rob, welcome to the show, buddy. How are you?
Good, my friend. How are you doing?
All good. Busy week in sport. Lots happening. As usual, we're here to discuss the most interesting topics and conversations. Well, one that really broke records this week on social media and caught a lot of attention is something that you've been working on for a long, long time. The most talked about venue in sport in the last, I'd say, last month or so is the new MSG Sphere in Las Vegas. This thing is amazing. It's got 17,600 seats. It's got 168,000 speakers, 1.2 million LED lights, and it's just taken the internet by storm. Some of the things they've been putting on their screens, all over Twitter, all over all social networks, getting billions of views. And you've been lucky enough to be a part of the building of that place. So take us through it, my friend.
Well, yeah, the Sphere, we've been involved a little bit from the, you know, behind the scenes. One of our partners are the folks at Cisco, and they're powering that building. So a lot of their servers and technology is in that building. And I've had the privilege to last October to actually tour the inside. And, you know, so to see, I was up in Vegas this week for meetings, and like the rest of the world, saw this, you know, magnificent venue, which, you know, is not ready to host guests yet, but the exterior is all lit up and ready to go. And I think we saw, you know, many versions of, we saw it as a moon, we saw an eyeball, we saw the NBA basketball for Summer League, which is going on this week. All kinds of, you know, light shows as you're driving down the strip. People are just stopping and looking, and it's pretty incredible. And obviously that's part of the attraction of what that venue is and how it operates. It is a, you know, fully immersive entertainment experience. U2 will be opening that venue up this fall. I think I'm going to go to a show. So it'll be pretty cool to kind of see, you know, how that, that venue not only performs in its full capacity, but if what we have seen the last couple of days and the reaction that we're seeing from the public is any indication, I think we're all in for a fantastic experience from the Sphere in Las Vegas. And as you and I have talked offline, there's a few more already in the works that are coming down the pike, you know, internationally as well. So this is, you know, This is a spectacular venue. They've been having some fun with it too. And when you've got the eyes of the world on Las Vegas, you know, with NBA Summer League, you had a Gold Cup, you know, semifinal match last night. You had, you know, International Fight Week just finished up in Las Vegas. It may be 114 degrees in Vegas, but let me just tell you, it was packed. So the world is still coming. The world's still watching. And, the Sphere is there for all to see.
Absolutely. And it really gives brands now a whole different avenue of raising awareness and pushing their messaging, because not only would the 50 million visitors who come to Vegas every year see their campaigns and see their messaging and content, now it's become this global phenomenon where people are posting these, whatever they see on there on social media. It's gone ballistic. So now that you've got the two sides of these marketing distribution channels, where you got online and offline, you're really gaining a lot of traction. So it's going to be interesting to see how these naming rights are valued.
Absolutely. And I was talking with a member of the MSG team, and let's just say that their phones were ringing with inquiries following you know, those. And that social media posting, and again, you could share and talk to people about what the capabilities of this venue were going to be. It was being built. Now they're seeing it. So it's, you know, we don't have to, there is no secret. You know, we have unveiled, so to speak, or they have unveiled. So it looks fantastic. And you think about Vegas and attractions. You know, we think about the Bellagio Water Show, how people stop and videotape that, and that's kind of part of the experience. Well, that is what is happening with the Sphere now. As you mentioned, people are just going over there and going, okay, what's next? And just like say, just taking footage of like whatever the show, the light show, the imagery that is there. And obviously when U2 starts performing, you can imagine, you know, what the exterior is going to look like, you know, during a concert as they push their brand partners and their footage of U2, you know, probably throughout their entire careers, you know, basically playing out on the Death Star there on just behind the Venetian. And it's spectacular. The technology is something that we, you know, again, where we've been involved is the LED technology and the powering of that. And so, you know, the light show that is being there, that's one of our clients that actually does those LED boards, does all those nodules. And so that's, it's pretty cool to kind of, you know, see it, you know, go from drawings to specs to construction to be, you know, have been up close and seeing that netting being put into place. And then now to see that venue, you know, do its thing. It was pretty cool.
I think that there's going to be no problem now selling the naming rights or any advertising on there because it's definitely made a mark.
Yes.
One thing that I think moving forward that people would love to hear is somebody from MSG joining us on the show and sort of giving us a spiel and breakdown. So I'm going to put the onus on you to sort of bring someone on.
Yeah, I'd love to get. Yeah, we'll do that again. We've talked about a Vegas show at some point with everything that's going on there, and the Sphere is definitely a topic of conversation in Las Vegas these days. So we'll put that on our agenda in the future.
Maybe we need to do a Vegas show in Vegas. Imagine that.
Okay, you're on.
All right, awesome. Moving on to our next conversation, Tyson Fury will box former UFC heavyweight champion of the world, Francis Ngannou. Now, this is big for many reasons. One of the reasons is that there was huge sagas and dramas around the negotiation talks between the UFC and Francis Ngannou. And he dragged on for a couple of years, and Francis was adamant on getting what he deserved. And he always said, we deserve more. We deserve more. I want more. And at the end, they parted ways. It doesn't mean that anybody is less or worse off or better off. It just means that two parties didn't agree. Everyone goes their own way. What's happened now is that this must have been brewing in the background because they had met a few times while he was still signed to UFC. Is that they've come out and announced that he's going to fight Tyson Fury. And he's set to make over $8 million when he fights Tyson Fury. His contract with the UFC was apparently, according to Dana White, $7 million. But this is from one fight. So many will say this is a win. Many will say he's done well for himself. But he can also backfire. If he doesn't do well in this fight, he can turn around and his opportunity and his value will definitely drop. How much is a different question. So what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, again, you know, another one of those topics that we discussed in a previous show, you know, Francis's decision to, you know, sign with the PFF and get involved in their, you know, PFF Africa and really give himself that that freedom to do fights like this. And obviously we've seen this crossover fight previously, you know, with Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, and it was massive, right? Massive success, obviously from a standpoint, with that fight from a pay-per-view. I mean, obviously Conor didn't win it because it was a boxing match, but we'll see that this will be a fight. Fury was trying to get another fight with Wilder, Joshua. You know, going through all the top heavyweight contenders that didn't seem to want to have a fight with him. So, hey, Francis Ngannou is like, I'll be your Huckleberry. Let's go. And, you know, again, it could be a win-win. I mean, look, you know, Fury is, the undisputed heavyweight champ. I mean, he holds, the millennial lineal title and all that. And so he's obviously, the big kahuna, which still in the world of boxing, the heavyweight champion of the world, still carries a lot of weight. Francis has an opportunity here to, show his value, show his worth as a boxer, as a fighter. Hopefully he doesn't have a flashback and try to kick in the middle of the fight. But it should be fun and it should be very interesting. And look, at the end of the day, I don't think any of us in the sports business hate on someone betting on themselves. We love that. And if he does not succeed, it's an $8 million windfall either way. He'll make more in one fight than he was going to make, under his UFC contract. So, he's set himself up. He's betting on himself. And let's see what happens. I'm very interested because one of my fighters is potentially going to be on the undercard of that fight. So I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully that'll, we'll have an exciting, boxing card of a lot of matchups that have not been set up before. But, when you see a Fury, and obviously this is another, where is it taking place? Abu Dhabi. Another part of the world that's been very aggressive and putting together big ticket events. So, definitely looking forward to seeing, not only that fight, but, kind of what the entire card looks like, because I think, I'd love to see a really focused heavyweight card with, all the fighters fighting.
Yeah, that would be amazing, because that's all entertainment, literally all night. There'll be knockouts left, right, and center. Yeah. But in saying that, I mean, even let's say Ngannou loses this fight, it doesn't really impact him in terms of his MMA career, because the PFL is always going to be there. Maybe his boxing will drop off. And one other point that you mentioned before is, I don't think Fury really wanted to fight AJ, because he knows AJ's fight is always going to be there and it's a big moneymaker. Like, even if AJ loses three in a row, it doesn't matter. They're rivals. Like, I'm not saying he's ducking him. I'm saying he's in the back of his head is saying that fight's always going to be there. This fight now, this guy's come out fresh. Before he loses to someone or something, let me make the opportunity, make the money, and move on.
Yeah, to your point, the fight against Joshua is there to fill Wembley or Tottenham Stadium whenever he wants to have that fight, 100%. And everybody will go see it. Again, it's one of those fights that you and I have talked about before. Boxing has a hard time making happen. Dana White would have made this happen three times, and twice on Sunday. He would have had him fight Wilder again. All of those fights that should have happened would have happened. And again, it's just one of those things where, I love, we know that it's out there, and as fans, as boxing fans, as people in the business, those are fights we want to see. This is a step in the direction. You got to stay active in the game. And you're right. Nagano's value as a challenger, as an opponent, is still very high right now. The intrigue's very high. He's still has that cachet. Yeah, he goes out and does his first boxing match and gets worked over by a journeyman. Maybe still wins, but everybody's like, yeah, a little rusty. Hey, if you're gonna get knocked out for $8 million, I'm with you.
Exactly, because they can always say, oh, he fought Tyson Fury. No, nobody's beating him.
Yeah,
right.
So he went to the top of the mountain right out of the gate.
Exactly. And then he can come back and do all this MMA stuff and whatever he wants to do. What would you say the commercial value of this fight would be?
Commercial value? It's in Abu Dhabi. So, we know it's going to be.
So is it confirmed in Abu Dhabi and not Saudi?
Is it Saudi? Is it?
It's got to be Saudi, because
Riyadh. I've got the Middle East rolling through my head, and I know we've talked about numerous, but yeah, I think it's Riyadh. So, but you know, when you, again, when you've got that,
the PIF. So
yeah, there's going to be some Aramco all over this. There's going to be some, probably some Valvoline, you know, deals.
A lot of money.
There'll be a lot of money behind this. And I think, yeah. I think, you know, commercial value of the fight is, you know, this is something that's going to be a massive pay-per-view. It's going to be a, you know, there's going to be a lot of, you know, sponsorship around it because those fighters obviously have their own partnerships as well. But, you know, look, I think this is where this is going to be is just another showcase, you know, feather in the cap to, you know, to PIF and Saudi to be able to, you know, host another global event when others. Yeah, there we are. You know, they're, you know, it's popping into our podcast on a weekly basis. But you know, commercially, look, I think it's a, you know, sponsorship around this, you know, we'll be in the millions. I think, you know, from a pay-per-view standpoint, you're looking at that, you know, $90 to $100 for the pay-per-view. You probably sell, you know, you probably get a million pay-per-views on this thing. You know, I mean, I think it'll, even with the time difference, I think people will be up watching this because people want to see this. You know, I think it'll be big news. Tickets will be off the hook. I mean, tickets will be crazy. Because of where it is.
Unbelievable. If we look at, I think personally, do it about 1.1 to 1.2 million.
I think it definitely eclipsed. What was, you know, like McGregor, Mayweather was like 600,000 or 700,000 pay-per-views.
No, it was more than that. Yeah, McGregor and Mayweather was 1 point something.
Was it?
I think it was about, yeah, it was the I think even more. I think it was even early twos.
Oh, was it? Well,
yeah.
With the way they smack talk, that was, you know, that maybe not as surprising.
You had the two biggest salesmen on earth, pretty much, you know, selling one another. It's insane. I mean, it's absolutely, absolutely insane. So. Wow, it's saying 4.3 million.
4.3 million. Because I think, what did McGregor make on that?
Domestic pay-per-views. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. I don't think you have that level of salesmanship. Huh?
It's Bleacher Report and ESPN about reporting it. It did 600 million in total revenue.
600 million in revenue. That's what, okay. So 600 million in revenue, 4.3. Yes. 4 point. Okay. Well, you know, I would say that this fight, you know, maybe would do well to approach, you know, a third of that.
Yeah.
You know, just because it's boxing and you know, it's a, you know, you don't have the one thing about Mayweather and McGregor is that, you know, right, they were salesmen. But they also made you really think they hated each other and that there was really going to be some action. You know, obviously you don't have that built-in animosity here with Fury and Nagano. But I think there's a strong curiosity factor. I mean, he's a mass. You know, I think all of us want to know. You know, we all look at Fury and go, you know, when he fights these other guys that are, you know, that are got muscles everywhere and whatever, you look at him, he's like, he just outboxes them and he's strong. He's powerful. I mean, he he surprises you every time, even though you know that he's, you know, Nagano was going to walk in there looking like a, you know, an Adonis. He's a bad, bad man. You know, we've seen him, you know, at the UFC level. So the curiosity is like, you know, is this the type of guy that could take Fury down with one punch? Maybe he could, you know, if he hit him. I mean, we, you know, you thought Wilder might do that. Wilder couldn't even hit him. You know, so
if Wilder can't do it, none of them can.
I'm expecting a very interesting first two rounds, and then I'm expecting Tyson Fury just to box him into oblivion.
He'll make it look like it's interesting, but he'll just it's gonna be over quickly. Anyway, let's keep moving. Moving on, another big name, Kylian Mbappe. He's at a bit of a crossroads with PSG. The Emir of Qatar is ordering PSG to sell Mbappe this summer. He wants him out.
Yeah.
Like, because if they don't sell him this summer, they'll get nothing for him next year. Because right. he'll go out on a free transfer. And there's all these rumors that Real Madrid have done a $200 million deal behind their backs, agreed already with Mbappe. So this is causing a lot of controversy at the moment.
Yeah, well, it's the second biggest, transfer move of the summer, right? And it emanating from the same club. Obviously, his reasoning behind wanting to leave is that he wants to compete for Champions League, and he's they haven't advanced as they've won the French League One, but they haven't been able to get past the semis, or quarters.
They've always failed short in the Champions League.
And even with a roster that has Messi and had Ramos and
Neymar
on there. I mean, Maria. Yeah. So you had what you thought was a good squad, and now and look, he's at the end of the day, same type of deal we've seen with other free agent types of situations is you got to sell him while you still control him. You want to get something back for him. We're seeing this debate now with Shohei Ohtani with the Angels. Do you wait till the end of the year and he goes into free agency and you get nothing because you're not going to pay him $700 million? Or do you trade him now and get something and then let somebody else, figure out how to pay him? But the thing you mentioned is I think the rumor has always been out there that he's had his eye on Real Madrid. And if there's a deal in place, that's collusion. That's a no-no. And so, FIFA needs to keep a very close watch on that because it's not fair to the existing club. Look, if the existing club can't get a deal done between player and club, okay, then let's find a resolution. And the resolution they've made the decision is you're either going to sign here and stay here for 5 years. Or we're going to sell you now because we're not going to go through a lame duck year season with you and then get nothing because you're not motivated. Maybe you're going to be trying to protect yourself for your next deal, all that kind of stuff. And totally fair and understandable in the position that PSG's in. So the hope is that the parties can get together and find a reasonable deal. If Real Madrid wants him now, Real Madrid needs to step up and pay for him. If they don't want to pay for him, then somebody else will. And, obviously you've got to send him to a place that he wants to go. Curious to where he might end up if it's not Real Madrid. Could we see Chelsea get into play? They just sold Pulisic to AC Milan. Do we see
Liverpool is apparently a destination that has been talked about a lot.
Yeah, I would imagine
his mum's a Liverpool fan.
A Premier League team, not one of the ones owned by the competitive royal families for sure.
We've spoken about this before. If Manchester United end up being bought by Sheikh Jassim,
they'll buy him an RP, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like it's the same family basically buying.
Yeah, so therein lies that would be the an obvious connection, but given the dollar amount and certainly the talent, You know, you're, you know, his destination is, you know, a La Liga, you know, a Serie A, Bundesliga, or EPL for sure. I mean, that's
for sure. The, you know, big leagues always.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Let's keep going, and we'll move on to our final topic, which is a big one actually. Prime is to be investigated by the FDA. So, Senator Chuck Schumer, which is a very decorated and public figure, says he has some concerns about the health issues that Prime could be causing these young kids. So apparently the Prime drink contains 200 milligrams of caffeine, or about six times more caffeine than a standard 12-ounce drink of Coca-Cola. And his concern is that it says that it's not intended for anybody under the age of 18, but it's been all the marketing and the fan base of these influencers is pretty much dominated by that, by the age group under the age of 18. Yep. And then who's buying it? All these young kids. And then what's happened on the business side is that they've gone and done deals with Barcelona, the Dodgers, UFC, and all these other big names and big groups. So they're everywhere. And now all of a sudden, Chuck Schumer's got an issue with the substances that are inside these drinks. What are your thoughts? Is this a political move?
Well, I'm not going to say it's a political move. But what I will say, and I think I shared this with you before, is that if you read enough on all of the sports drinks that are out there, the sodas that are being sold, none of them are good for you. There are very few. And I think, if you're looking at electrolyte replacement, you've got the Gatorades and the Powerades as the kind of the leaders in that category. They're owned by Coke and Pepsi. You know, Body Armor was a player, and Coke bought them. Now you have Prime in there kind of, you know, poking the bear. Obviously, they've got some star power behind them, and they're making some big moves, you know, with some marketing and sports alliances. My initial question is that, you know, my initial thought is, well, you know, Gatorade and Powerade aren't going to just let them come in the door. You know, we've seen BioSteel, also another one that jumped in and got the NHL, you know, but, you know, that was one that was obviously much more scientific and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I think there's a couple things at work here. One, I think there's probably some, behind the scenes relationships with, you know, people in power that could, you know, make some inquiries about the health of a product. And I think that's very viable. There was a soft drink back in the day called Jolt that, you know, marketing campaign was twice the sugar and all the caffeine. Literally, it felt like you were drinking, caffeine sugar soup, but it was a soda pop that, you know, kind of, you know, gave you a jolt, no doubt. Now, you know, Prime, you know, is supposed to be, you know, rehydration and electrolytes and all that kind of stuff. And like I said, designed maybe for high performing athletes. You're right. They, you know, they're marketing to, you know, anytime you're sponsoring sports team, sports property, you're touching youth. And so you got to be very careful with that. It's why you see, you know, when there is an alcoholic beverage or a betting partner, that's the front of the shirt partner on a team, you see that anything sold in the youth sizes doesn't have that on there, for that reason. And Prime is one that, I follow these because I've got sons that are athletes and, you know, they don't drink Gatorade. They don't drink Powerade. You know, they use, you know, Liquid IV, or they use, you know, Pedialyte sticks, and, you know, they use something that's a little bit more, scientific and less sugars, less, bad stuff, so to speak. But it'll be very interesting to see kind of how this affects. At the end of the day, I don't think it's going to affect their deals, you know, that they have in place. But the question, you know, at the end of the day, that those deals are going to play themselves out. The question is the consumer market going to be able to buy it and consume it in the quantities that are going to continue to justify the spending that they're going to be having? Because at the end of the day, you can market the hell out of a drink. The drink tastes bad and it's not good for you. You're not going to be around long. And so if it didn't go through this, you know, proper vetting to be launched, well, you know, that's a whole different conversation, and there should have been a little bit more oversight in that, because you can't be marketing a product that's it's going to be damaging to your health. But also at the same time, there are beverage products that are marketed all the time that are, you know, that have, you know, aspartame in it and all that kind of stuff, and it's not good for you. So it'll be interesting to follow out and curious to see if there's a backstory that comes up to see if there was any calls from Atlanta, Georgia, or Purchase, New York to Mr. Schumer's office that say, hey, can't have this, need your help.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes sense. That's where we actually live in today. So would not surprise me. But anyway, we'll see how that one plays out. Interesting turn of events, actually, from going such a high to all of a sudden now these senators looking out into your product.
Well, but, no, I mean, sometimes
really messy from here.
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes when you're lurking in the shadows and you're kind of this challenger brand, they don't really worry about you until you kick them in the shin. Well, you know, UFC. FC Barcelona, you want to play at their level? Okay, you just put yourself in the limelight, and now we're gonna scrutinize you a little bit more.
It's on for young and old. All right,
that's right.
Awesome. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Rob, once again. Awesome show. Interesting conversations as always. And we'll catch you all next week.
Yep, quick one tonight, and thanks for tuning in, and look forward to circling back next week and waiting to see all the exciting stuff the world of sports brings our way.
Take care, everyone. See you later.
Take care.